Hey, Ryan Reynolds here. Wishing you a very happy half-off holiday because right now, Mint Mobile is offering you the gift of 50% off unlimited. To be clear, that's half price, not half the service. If Mint is still premium unlimited wireless for a great price. So, that means a half day, yeah?
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 for 3 month plan equivalent to $15 per month required. New customer offer for first 3 months only. Speeds low after 35 gigabytes if network's busy. Taxes and fees extra. See mintmobile.com.
Welcome back, everyone, to the channel. Tonight's terrifying story is about this construction worker out of the state of Tennessee who gets offered this once-in-a-lifetime opportunity gig in the state of Ohio. And unfortunately for him and his colleagues, that was the worst mistake he had ever made in his life. Now, let's get spooky. If you're new to the channel, subscribe, click on that bell, and smash that thumbs up and tell a friend. Do not trust Elsar. If you take nothing else from my post, then spread the words everywhere. Share it. Tweet it. Paint it on the frickin' walls. Someone has to do something. Someone has to stop them before they go too far. I know it sounds like some crazy conspiracy theory. I know most of you won't believe me, but I swear they're real. Real and dangerous. My name is Greg Burkitts. They already know who I am, so there's no point in the whole fake name thing, is there? Before it all went wrong, I used to work for a little construction company in Tennessee. My wife Sasha and I had an apartment. We were making ends meet, even if just barely, and we were trying to have a kid. We both knew it would make our lives 10 times more hectic, but we didn't care. Some people might think that's stupid, but when you're with the person you love, your perspectives change. I wanted to be a dad in the worst way, and every time I saw Sasha paging through a pregnancy book or shopping for baby clothing online, it made us both giggle like excited schoolchildren. One day, our boss called the entire crew together and handed out pamphlets detailing an offer made by some oddball group called the Black Crow Foundation. With all the industrial accidents that had been happening around the country lately, the foundation wanted to help keep America's waterways and air pollution free, but they needed manpower, especially men who knew their way around power tools. The massive nonprofit would pay each man $250,000 for 1 month of work at various chemical cleanup sites around the country, with all personal protective equipment provided for us. You read that right. $250,000, post-tax for just 30 days of work. Our boss checked the group out thoroughly, called government registration offices, even met with their attorney, all to ensure it wasn't some elaborate scam. Even the Army sent out a high-ranking officer to vouch for them. In the end, the boss man told us with the biggest grin I had ever seen him wear that the BCF was real and gave us the green light to sign up. Everyone did, including me. After all, for that much money, who wouldn't? Besides, Sasha and I were getting by, but as soon as she got pregnant, I knew I would need a lot more money to keep my family warm and fed. Call me what you will, but I love my wife, and I wanted to give her everything. I would have even gone if they only offered $50,000. Sasha was naturally both thrilled and skeptical when I broke the news to her. For a price so steep, she reasoned that there had to be a catch. But we both knew to throw such an opportunity aside on suspicion alone was ludicrous. We might never get this kind of chance again. So, I bid her an emotional goodbye, packed my bags, and got on a bus provided by the foundation, bound for my pre-selected worksite. 7 days later, I found myself slogging through the forests of southern Ohio, tired and missing home, while the overcast sky swept curtains of continuous rain. My rubber boots slid on the mud, and I tripped.
Careful!
360 caught me under my right arm and kept me from falling on my face.
You don't want to rip your suit.
You mean no one wants to see me end up like Seven? Raindrops pattered down on the yellow plastic hood over my head. Each tom-tom a liquid rhythm, a stark reminder of just what a torn suit could entail. 24, are you all right? A sharp voice of R11 barked from the front of the column, his olive-colored rubber overalls matching the gloomy surroundings of the Appalachian foothills, and the skeptical trees dripped cold rain onto us both with indifference. I eyed the skinny black rifle in his gloved hands and straightened up. I'm fine. I just slipped. R11 stepped closer to me, and his wary eyes searched my burden from behind my gas mask. Equipment check. The rest of the column froze, all eyes on me. 36 and R11. The other guards shifted on their feet in uncomfortable stamps, stroked their rifles with nervous thumbs and scanned the trees. My fellow workers in their yellow suits stood motionless, all waiting to see if I had made some dreaded mistake, one that would spell my immediate removal. Why do they all have to stare like that? Doing my best not to sigh in annoyance and embarrassment, I unshouldered my bulky pack and balanced it on one knee.
All in order, sir. Nothing's broken.
R11 glared hard at me, and his narrowed eyes traveled the length of my suit with meticulous scrutiny. No one moved, and aside from the pattering rain, not a sound could be heard. A few yards away, R16, one of the other guards, flexed his grip on his rifle and took a step my way. Please God, I didn't do anything wrong. My suit isn't ripped. I feel fine. I didn't drop anything.
Clear?
R11 let his shoulders slacken and took one hand off of his rifle to give me an encouraging clap on the arm.
Hang in there and watch your step, all right? It's not much further.
With that, 36 helped me pull my pack over my shoulders again, and the column shuffled onward. Grateful to be out from under the hawkish watch of the guards, I put my mind to breathing under my tight-fitted respirator and tried not to think about Seven. With the dull gray sky above empty of any birds and no wind to speak of, the squelching of boots in the mud, muffled breathing under protective masks, and the creak of rucksack straps echoed like cannon shots, I couldn't smell anything other than the chlorine sting in my rubber mask. My dry throat cried out for water, but I knew we wouldn't be allowed to drink anything until we had reached the site. 36 hefted his pack higher onto his broad shoulders ahead of me, and I took a moment to study him. As with all the others, I didn't know his name, and he didn't know mine. All we had to go by were numbers given to us at random the first day that we had showed up. That had been by design, and as far as I knew, even the guards with their green suits, black guns, and the ominous R before their coded numbers didn't know each other's names. None of the guys from my old job in Tennessee were at this site, and I had a feeling that this too was deliberate. Yet, of all the workers so far, 36 seemed to be the only one who wasn't spooked by the bizarre secrecy of the operation. He reminded me of my father, at least twice my age and a head taller, with silver hair and a warm smile that didn't reflect the suspicion the rest of the crew emanated. In fact, 36 seemed to be the one person in the entire operation who never drew any attention, no matter what he did. When he had somehow found out about my birthday on the second day at base camp, 36 had miraculously produced an old-style Hershey bar as an impromptu gift. Even the straight-laced colonel had been too shocked at seeing me with retro candy to yell about it,
though he had doubled the guard around camp afterward. If they would just let someone go in the town for better food, chocolate wouldn't be so rare. I mean, seriously, they're paying us a stupid amount of money just to be here. Does the colonel really think we'd run off? The only guy without a number, and he's got an enormous stick shoved up his...
We're here.
I almost ran into 36, and my heart did a nervous flip-flop as I halted at his words. The rest of the column filed into the edge of the clearing behind me.
Hey, it's Austin James. Yes, I'm living with diabetes, but it doesn't have to define me. Thanks to the Freestyle Libre 3 Plus sensor, I get real-time glucose readings throughout the day. The Freestyle Libre 3 Plus sensor is small and easy to wear, giving me the freedom to focus on my life as a parent and a musician. Now this is progress. You can get a free sensor at freestylelibre.us.
Offer available for people who qualify. Visit myfreestyle.us to see all terms and conditions. Certain exclusions apply. Data on file, Abbott Diabetes Care, or prescription only. Safety info found at freestylelibre.us.
Hey football fans, Drew Brees here. Kroger Play and Owner's Box have teamed up for the next generation of daily fantasy sports. First-time players can get $25 in free entries, plus 250 fuel points. And you can score all season long with 2x the fuel points for every dollar spent to use at Kroger Fuel Centers. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
Void where prohibited. Eligibility restrictions apply. 18 plus in most eligible states, but age varies by jurisdiction. Offer is valid between 8/6/25 and 1/5/26. Terms apply. See full terms and conditions at ownersbox.com/footballfuelpointstc.
One by one, ground to a standstill. The squelch of the boots dying to a solemn silence. Glad for the reprieve and curious, I shuffled aside to peer around 36 into the worksite for the first time. Whoa. It sat nestled between a grove of pines like a giant sleeping dragon of steel, with the prow jutting out over a defilade, and the stern hunched against several limestone boulders. The massive propellers hung a good 15 feet above the ground, and the radio antennas rose high into the slate-gray sky above the dense trees and rigid lines. All around, the green pines stood bent or broken from the weight of the thing coming down on them, and ripples in the bulky steel hull showed where the craft's algae-lined skin had slammed into the ground. I blinked hard and took a step forward, almost unable to believe my own eyes. Is that a battleship?
Eyes on me!
A cold, familiar voice cut through the tension, and the others broke their wide-eyed stares to find the colonel perched on the hood of a nearby army truck, dressed in his own olive-drab protective suit. From where I stood, I couldn't see the colonel's eyes behind his plastic gas mask visor, but the stern caution in his voice, the way he didn't completely turn to face us as if afraid to take his eyes off of the warship, made ice run through my blood.
This is the work site. You will be here from 0600 to 1800 hours every day. You will stay in your assigned work teams and report any new findings directly to the guard force. Under no circumstances are you to take anything from this area for personal use. Such actions will result in immediate removal. Am I understood?
Seven's manic scream filtered through my memory, along with the echo of the gunshot that ended it. I nodded, along with everyone else.
Good.
The colonel waved his gloved hand at the landlocked vessel, and I could have sworn I caught his voice tremble ever so slightly.
Our guard forces have already swept both the ship and the surrounding area for security threats. Your job is to take radiological and magnetic readings, as well as gather all loose items inside the ship for collection. Scanning teams will move in first, then the evidence teams. All recovered items will be bagged and placed in secured containers before being loaded onto the trucks here.
He pointed to a row of waiting diesel trucks, against whom leaned several more soldiers in green chemical suits, all carrying rifles.
Any questions?
You mean like how did a battleship end up in the middle of nowhere, Ohio? Still, I didn't raise my hand, and no one else did either. Something about this rubbed me wrong. The air tasted metallic through my mask.
and a cold sensation ripped down my spine like water over the bones. It occurred to me that ever since arriving at the base camp a few miles away, I had yet seen a bird or any kind of other animal in this general vicinity. The lack of noise had been unsettling then, but now it made my stomach churn. I risked a glance over my shoulder at the way we had come. My gaze met R-16's and he, alone with the rest of the guard force, stared back from their line drawn across the trail, weapons at low ready. Sweat started to roll down my armpits, and I tried to breathe slow to calm my panic. "They're just securing the perimeter, that's all. The colonel said we get to leave at 1800. They're just here for our protection." "Relax." 36's muffled whisper startled me from my frantic thoughts. "They don't want to shoot anyone. They're as nervous as you are." Gripping the straps of my pack, I swallowed a sour-tasting lump in my throat, glad he couldn't see my doubtful wince behind my respirator. "If you say so." Ahead, the colonel checked his watch and threw another murky look towards the looming battleship. "Right. If there aren't any questions, team leaders, take charge of your units and get to work." Like trained yellow automations, 36, myself, and the rest of the workers unshouldered our heavy packs and began to ready various pieces of equipment. Some had hammers, drills, handheld gas torches, and battery-powered saws. Others, like my team, had Geiger counters, electromagnetic detectors, and enough cameras to fit out a library in North Korea. Up until now, the extra details of our job had been kept a secret by the higher-ups, who gave us vague replies whenever we asked. Even though it made more sense as the seconds ticked by, I didn't feel any better about it. I picked up some sort of handheld meter and noticed a few words stenciled onto the side in faded, smeared black letters, as if someone had tried to scrub them off but failed. Property of Environmental Liminal Space Elevation and Reductive Program. My brow furrowed. Elsar? I thought we were working for the Black Crow Foundation. Perhaps this was some sort of hand-me-down piece of gear donated by someone else? "Nine and I will take the readings. 24, you and 15 will record." My team leader, 11, adjusted the black nylon strap on his side-slung Geiger counter and broke me from my train of thought. 36 said nothing, silent and content with his large flashlight. Our team was the only one with five members, and for some reason, 11 never remembered 36 in any of his checks or briefings. It always bothered me, but not enough to say anything since 36 never seemed to mind. I wasn't that close with the team anyway, 36 being my only friend in camp. In fact, I had seen the others so infrequently that in this moment, I couldn't quite recall what they looked like without their suits on. "How are we getting in?" 15 visibly shook, and his gloved hands almost dropped the camera he held twice. 11 jerked his head at another team that lugged a large roll of rope netting towards the ship. "I figure we'll climb the side. No way we're cutting through all that armor, not without bigger cutting torches." To my left, 9 swiveled his hooded head to examine our tiny group. "So we're just not going to talk about the fact that there is a literal battleship in the middle of the woods?" His voice rang out louder than he likely intended, and all but 36 froze. 11, 15, and I gathered at 9, our eyes darting towards the nearby guards. None looked our way, but still my skin crawled. That was way too close. As if he thought the same thing, 9 let his shoulders slump in a sheepish, uncomfortable apology. "Later," 11 hissed behind his respirator, and rolled his deflated rucksack up in a tarp to keep the rain from soaking in further. The rest of us followed suit, and with our gear shouldered, we headed for the beached steel warship. In a broad line, our team moved along with the other scanners, and swept the ground with our detection equipment for any signs of abnormality. I carried a small notepad on a clipboard, a camera mounted on my left shoulder in a special nylon harness. 15 recorded 9's electromagnetic readings, and I took down the radiation levels from 11. 36 walked along beside me with his oversized flashlight and said nothing. 0.6, 0.3, 0.5. 11 droned on, his voice almost as auto-tuned as the clicking counter in his gloved hands. Nominal, nominal, nominal. I scratched the numbers down with my pen and tried not to look up at the ship that loomed ever closer. Per our brief instruction on the equipment, radiation levels were normal, for the most part. 9 couldn't find anything remotely strange about the electromagnetic fields in this area. Yet in my mind's eye, I could see 7's contorted face, hear his insane screams, and I shivered. All around, the scattered brain.
Hey, football fans, Drew Brees here. Kroger Play and Owner's Box have teamed up for the next generation of daily fantasy sports. First-time players can get $25 in free entries, plus 250 fuel points. And you can score all season long with 2x the fuel points for every dollar spent to use at Kroger Fuel Centers. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
Void where prohibited. Eligibility restrictions apply. 18 plus in most eligible states, but age varies by jurisdiction. Offer is valid between 8-6-25 and 1-5-26. Terms apply. See full terms and conditions at ownersbox.com/football. Fuel points TC.
Branches from the trees that the ship had crashed poked into the sky like skeletal fingers, as if silently trying to warn us away. An icy sensation ran down my back, and I imagined them reaching for me, their silent screams a strange static that rang in my head. It escalated into a roar so that my ears itched, and the breath stuck inside my windpipe like it had been glued there. For a split second, the noise crashed in waves against the inside of my skull, along with a low monotone beeping. Almost like a rhythm, or a pattern. Something grabbed my shoulder, and I almost jumped out of my skin in fright. 36 met my frightened gaze, and pointed with his flashlight ahead of me.
Stay focused. You have to climb now.
The massive iron ship squatted not yards away, its thick rivets coated in fresh surface rust. Pine needles stuck to its smooth sides, the red paint from beneath the waterline chipped and peeling. All the scanning teams stood in line at the side of the ship and gaped up at it. Though with their masks on, I couldn't see their slack jaws. In somber reflex, the first team busily prepared 2 pneumatic launchers to fire grappling hooks over the tall gunnels. One of the other scanners, 3, slogged through the muck to 11. We're taking the bridge, and teams 2 and 3 are all at the upper decks. I need you guys to go with team 5 and 6 to the lower levels and sweep them out, okay? 11 drew a sideways glance at the battleship, and then back at the line of green-clawed soldiers far to our rear. They checked it, right? 3's eyes held the same cynical resignation behind his protective mask as 11's. They did, but I don't think we'd be wearing this garbage if it wasn't completely safe. So stay on your toes, alright? Radio me if anything goes wrong. Like that would help, 9 muttered, and I snorted in agreement beneath my own mask. Chuck. Chuck. Both pneumatic grapples shot into the air and landed with resounding clangs on the deck of the old warship. As soon as their metal hooks snagged the ship's railing, the advanced team unfurled a long brown cargo net and hauled it up the slippery steel by the slopes. It reminded me of the old photographs I had seen in my school days. Black and white visages of men climbing over the sides of these mighty iron titans, loaded down with weapons and gear, to charge into the unknown surf of war. how strange was it that we, similarly loading down with gear and apprehension, now strove to surmount these same nets and rails to discern why this vessel existed here at all. "All right, let's move," Three called from the foot of the cargo net, doing his best to shout in a full-face respirator. "Hands on the verticals, feet on the horizontals. 3 points of contact at all times, and for God's sakes, don't look down." My heart leapt into my throat, but I swallowed hard and sloshed through the rain after the others towards the net. I had never been very good at climbing in gym class, and the rope would be soaked with the incessant rain by the time my turn came. A fall from that height would mean broken bones at minimum, and who knew what contaminants lay undiscovered on the ground. All it took for Seven was falling asleep with his headphones on 4 miles away. We don't even know what we're dealing with, do we? No one does. The promised $250,000 payment for this job struck me as pitiful now that I stood at the threshold of whatever monstrosity the authorities had stumbled upon in this desolate stretch of Ohio's wilderness. I thought of Sasha and our jubilant plans for when I returned home. I'd be so proud to be able to provide that much for us, after 2 years of scraping by paycheck to paycheck. If she only knew where I stood now, I doubted my darling wife would even want the money anymore. 11 and 15 scaled the net, followed by 9 and myself. 36 climbed right next to me, as calm and cool as if this was an everyday occurrence for him. I shook like a leaf. My heart rammed itself against my chest, and the muddy soles of my rubber overboots slid on the net with cruel ease. "Almost there," 36 grunted from his place on the netting. "You're doing fine." "Uh-huh." I wanted the sound carefree, but my hands trembled so hard that I felt like I stood on a giant oily washing machine. My palm missed the next handhold, and everything went into slow motion. Around me, the entire world jerked downwards, and my extended right boot missed its mark thanks to my backward tumble. In a panic, I squeezed my eyes shut, my lungs closing in terror. A quick, strong weight crushed the air from my chest, and I stopped so hard that my teeth clacked together. "Dude, you okay?" I opened my eyes to find 15 and 36 each had a hand on my nylon camera harness. Their quick thinking the only thing between me and a 60-foot fall. Scrabbling for the net, I didn't breathe until I had all four limbs safely back on the thick webbing. "Yeah, thanks, guys." 15 cocked his head to one side, his voice confused. Okay. Good thing you're lighter than you look." 36 chuckled and waited for me to crawl up beside him again. "Come on, it'll be drier inside." "I don't care if it's soaked. As long as I can't fall, I'll take it." Once my legs swung over the steel rail of the ship and my feet hit the deck, I let out a long sigh of relief. "There he is." 9 slapped me on the back, his tone warm and teasing. "Almost lost you. Good thing 15 is dummy strong." "Or just strong." 15 shook his head at 9, but I could tell the praise pleased him. "Seriously though, 24, don't do that again." "Sure thing." I gave him a thumbs up, though my knees knocked beneath my suit. 11 waved us over, his Geiger counter in hand, and his green eyes betrayed a concern that made me forget about my near-death tumble. 9, get your scanner out." 9 unbuckled his bulky electromagnetic scanner from its place on his harness and pointed it over the ship. For the first time in the brief period we had worked together, 9 seemed speechless. "So, you're seeing it too." 11 kept his voice low, and all around the deck, I noticed the other teams clotted together, talking in hushed, concerned whispers. There's no way the rain did this. These are waterproof. It has to be the ship.
What is it?
15 stuck his head over 11's shoulder, too curious to be afraid. 11 held up his device and my guts soured. 9's electromagnetic scanner was having what amounted to be a mechanical seizure, where in 1 second it flew off the charts on high readings, and the next, it dropped down to nothing at all. 11's Gregor counter, on the other hand, showed radioactive detection, but not in a consistent pattern. It didn't spike randomly like 9's readings, but pulsed in a rhythmic, almost synchronized beat, like an irradiated heart monitor. 15 and I stood frozen, too stunned to record the rapid-fire measurements. 11 tapped the side of his counter with frustrated knuckles, but couldn't get it to stabilize.
I'll let 3 know, and he'll radio back to the colonel. Maybe he'll pull us out. Sit tight, guys.
The instant 11 walked away, 9 turned to us, and cast a few furtive looks around the deck.
Something isn't right. I was told this would be a chemical cleanup job, not some naval version of Chernobyl. And how on earth did they get this thing way out here anyways?
They couldn't have. 15 crossed both arms in his typical discomfort at anything that resembled a threat to normalcy. It had to have been an accident. Maybe there was a flood or something.
9 set both hands on his hips in indignation.
A flood? Look around, man. We're miles from the nearest major river, and at least 2 states away from the ocean. It didn't float here. Besides, do you see how these guards acted? They didn't even want to get close to this thing.
I leaned back over the railing, and from my high place atop this strange vessel, the line of soldiers and the distant tree line looked like little olive drab.
Hey, football fans, Drew Brees here. Kroger Play and Owner's Box have teamed up for the next generation of daily fantasy sports. First-time players can get $25 in free entries plus 250 fuel points. And you can score all season long with 2 times the fuel points for every dollar spent to use at Kroger fuel centers. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
Void where prohibited. Eligibility restrictions apply. 18 plus in most eligible states, but age varies by jurisdiction. Offer is valid between 8-6-25 and 1-5. 26 terms apply. See full terms and conditions at ownersbox.com/footballfuelpointstc.
Dance. Maybe they don't know either. After all, if they knew, why hire us? Why pay money for something they could do themselves? So, where did this hunk of junk come from then?
9's questions remained unanswered, as 11 strode back into our circle, his fists balled.
He beckoned the 4 of us closer and spat between angry, gritted teeth.
3 wants to pull out, but the colonel said no. I guess radiation isn't at lethal levels, so he wants us to finish our scans and help the evidence team start cleanup. So here's what we're gonna do. We go down and get our scans done quick as possible. Once we're finished, we radio 3 and head for the ground again, then it's safe. If the colonel wants, he could come help us shovel radioactive bolts for all I care. But I'm not getting cancer 40 years too soon while he sits on his tail in a nice dry tent, got it?
I nodded along with the others, both emboldened and unsettled at 11's defiance. I didn't want to risk sterility via irradiation, but I still remembered how the colonel had dispatched 7 without so much as blinking an eye. Suppose he ordered us back to the boat at gunpoint. None of us had any guns, and even if we did, there was far more soldiers than workers. Sasha and I couldn't have children if I got shot.
3 held his team to the bridge, and I trailed behind 11, awed at the sheer size of this ship. It seemed to be a huge island of metal, and I racked my brain to try and remember how long my grandfather's micro-sweeper had been during his service in the Korean War.
It's an Iowa class.
36 strode behind me as we went down a long set of iron stairs into the lower decks of the ship. One of the biggest battleships America ever built. They say the guns were so powerful that a full broadcast with all 4 turrets would crater the surface of the ocean and expose the hull right down to the keel.
I clicked on the headlamp built into my hood and swept its bright white beam over the bulkheads of the vessel. Wow, I wonder what this was once called. Seraph. Nine waved back from the dark corridor at the foot of the stairs and tapped his gloved hand on the circular life preserver on the wall. USS Seraph. My brow furrowed, and I clanked down the rest of the metal stairs in silence. History had been a side hobby of mine for years, but I had never heard of USS Seraph, not in any books or documentaries. Granted, I was no professor, but with such a big ship, I figured I would have at least heard of it somewhere. Especially from Grandpa. He knew tons of ships, and this thing should have been around for the Korean War. Huh. Weird. Down two flights of narrow steps we went, through oval-shaped metal bulkhead doors and claustrophobic shadowy corridors. In the dark interior of the battleship, our headlamps illuminated clean hallways, fresh paint on the steel, and even scuff marks on the floor from shoe polish rubbed off boots. Blue tin cups sat on desks, still brimming with coffee that had gone cold, and paper manuals laid open on antiquated control posts. It seemed as if the sailors of the USS Seraph had left the ship only days ago, everything frozen in time. Did the soldiers clear out the bodies? Nine's voice echoed in the dark expanse of the third deck passageway, his scanner still spasming. Eleven's Geiger counter thumping away at every step. Or am I somehow missing the corpses of thousands of sailors? 11-2 acted uninterested in his counter now that we were deep inside the ship, and peered into various small compartments we had passed by with caution, only to find abandoned workstations, empty bunks, and ancient equipment of war. I doubt it. They're having us do all this heavy lifting. Besides, you see any blood? There's not even a scrape of loose clothing. Maybe it's a trick. 15 glanced behind us, and his dark eyes darted back and forth in paranoia. They could be testing some kind of secret weapon on us or something. My cousin lives an hour away from here. He's been hearing some crazy stuff coming from Barron County. Maybe the government is pretending to be some non-profit for some kind of experiment. Or, 9 poked his head into the room and searched the abandoned space with his light. Someone else put this thing here to draw us in, like a mousetrap with cheese. Who? Aliens? 15 tried to sound incredulous, but his gloved hands shook with the clipboard and pen, his headlamp wavering as well. 9 shrugged and kicked at the stray pebble from 11's muddy boots. I don't know. You remember 7's meltdown? He was screaming about a long, dark road, falling from the sky and voices. I'm telling you, this thing didn't get here on its own. It was put here on purpose. It doesn't matter how it got here, 11 checked his Geiger counter. But from the way his shoulders hitched in anxiety, I wondered if he didn't secretly agree with one of their theories, or both. The sooner we get this over with, the sooner we could leave. As long as no one gets hurt, I don't care if the aliens and the government have a top-secret orgy in this rust bucket. With that, 11 moved off down the center corridor, followed by 9 and an uneasy 15. Chafing at being left in the rear yet again, I picked up my boot to step through the next bulkhead after them. Beep. I whirled around and stared off into another dark corridor on my left. Beep, beep. Beep. Beep, beep. My nerves tingled, and I realized that it wasn't from 11's counter, nor 9's scanner. None of us had cell phones, thanks to the colonel confiscating them after 7's demise. Nothing we had with us could have made that sound. Shh. Beep, beep. Beep. Garbled radio static, followed by more monotone beeps echoed faintly from somewhere deep inside the darkness, and sent chills running down my spine. the ship's lights and power weren't on, and without the massive oil-fired engines producing current, nothing mechanical in this iron behemoth should be working. Am I hearing things? Should I say something? What if the others think I'm going crazy, like Seven?
It's close by. 36 walked up beside me, and the beam of his extra-large flashlight probed the blackness of the unexplored hallway like a white laser. Come on!
I opened my mouth to protest, but stopped myself. 36 had never steered me wrong, and saved my life at least once today. Besides, we were supposed to report any strange activity to 3, and this counted as strange in my book. Maybe if I was the first one to report something unusual, the Colonel would give me a bonus, or at least a phone call home to Sasha. With how close it sounds, we could check it out, and catch up with the others before they even notice we're gone. Taking a deep breath, I cast one last cautious glance at the others, and pursued 36 down the side hall. Part 2. If all goes well, this will be the last time you'll hear from me. I've been preparing for days now, planning routes with Sasha, stealing a few license plates from a local scrapyard, and pulling as much cash as I can without arousing suspicion. It's a shame, really. Most of the $250,000 in my bank account will stay there, untouched, since there's no way I could take it all and not alert Elsar. They've been trailing me ever since I left the worksite, and now they're monitoring my bank account. But I can siphon out enough to get us far from our apartment, to a new home, a new life, and a fresh start. Sasha is out cold, curled up under her favorite fuzzy blanket in bed, and I don't want to wake her until I have to. I've been slowly moving our sleep schedule 1 hour at a time over the past few days, so that by the time I'm ready to pull my plan into motion, it'll happen when the people watching us least expect it. So, for now, I sit here at my desk, typing this out with the shades.
Hey, football fans, Drew Brees here. Kroger Play and Owner's Box have teamed up for the next generation of daily fantasy sports. First-time players can get $25 in free entries, plus 250 fuel points. And you can score all season long with 2 times the fuel points for every dollar spent to use at Kroger Fuel Centers. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
Void where prohibited. Eligibility restrictions apply. 18 plus in most eligible states, but age varies by jurisdiction. Offer is valid between 8-6-25 and 1-5-26. Terms apply. See full terms and conditions at ownersbox.com/footballfuelpointstc.
Drawn and the door locked. Once this is over, it's time for a few hours of shut-eye. Then drive, nap, eat, and repeat. Until then, I'll pour as much as I could remember into this dusty old laptop, with the hopes that someone out there can use this information for good. After leaving the others, I followed 36 further and further into the dark interior of the ship. More long, tight passages snaked between thick steel bulkheads, some with painted warning signs, others with cheery navy posters or even the occasional pinup girl. Something about the way they watched us from the old paper unnerved me, the smiles strained, the irises dark and unfeeling. Silence permeated the air, only broken by our footsteps, and the footsteps of the other teams echoing through the metal hull from all over the ship. Every breath I took became an abomination, some horrible misdeed that would surely bring judgment raining down on my head like the massive shells from the battleship's main guns. Relax. You're just on edge because of that garbage 9 was saying. Talk to 36. That always calms you down. So, I cleared my throat, and squinted into the dark with nervous caution. You think it was aliens? 36 laughed, a booming fatherly chuckle that rang down the empty halls of the Seraph. No, 9 and 15 have colorful imaginations, but I'm afraid they're both mistaken. Reassuring and curious by the confident way he spoke, I fell into step with 36, and began to ignore the murky doorways we passed on either side. So, what's your theory? He paused at the intersection and met my inquisitive eyes with his gray ones. Have you ever heard of the term equilibrium? I frowned behind my gas mask. Isn't that like balance? Exactly that. 36 went right, down a corridor lined with big pipes that ran horizontal to the floor. Balance in all things. Take a ship, for example. It needs balance so it doesn't roll over on the water. So you add weights to make it sit lower in the water, but not so much that it actually sinks. Your objective is to float, but in order to float, you sometimes have to sink. Stepping over another bulkhead threshold, I blinked at the burst of lightheadedness and trailed after him. But how does that get a ship into the woods? My perception of sound started to fade, and I noticed that my headlamp had grown dimmer, though 36's flashlight had not. A familiar static crept into my brain again, and almost didn't catch 36 making a left turn at a set of downward stairs. If an apple falls from a tree, does it go up or down? Down? I grimaced at the slight hum in my ears, but could only shake my head at the irritation, since the suit hood blocked my fingers from checking my ear canals. Indeed. 36 descended further into the bowels of the ship, my light flickering to a pitiful gasp, while his stayed bright as a shooting star. Nature seeks balance, and when things are out of balance, it restores them in the only way it knows how. But what happens if the curtain of reality, the fabric that holds together what you know of as real, tears? Things slip through, fall out of its reality, and into another. An imbalance is created, and so, nature must do what it does best. Restore balance. Hushed static turned the thunderous waves in my skull that demanded to be released, and my ears itched so bad that my head hurt. Still, I stumbled along after 36. My headlamp going out, with only his soft voice and blinding white flashlight to guide me. 36 ran an affectionate hand over the walls, as though exploring an old family home. The crew of this vessel didn't intend for this to happen, any more than the soldiers outside intended for them to crash land it here. But something equally massive must have fallen out of this world in order for a ship this size to fall into it. However, it seems that the crew stumbled through a different rift than the Seraph, and for that, their world lies in peril. At the hall's end, he ducked into a large steel door the size of a pickup truck, and my eardrums rippled with roars of undulated static. My mind reeled, bombarded by eerie screams of strange, warbled fuzz, and ice clogged my veins in the belated form of confusion. Yet in the midst of my mental fog, something pierced the chaotic storm, like a beacon in the night.
Beep, 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 beep.
The sounds. I hear the sounds again. I leaned against the bulkhead for support. My legs fell asleep, and the numbness inched up my body with slow but malicious progress. It took every ounce of strength I had to lift my feet, which seemed to weigh 1,000 pounds, and drag myself into the room behind 36. Cold air drained my body of heat, and every joint locked up with stiffness. My vision blurred, and I saw Sasha's warm smile, her dancing blue eyes, tasted her sweet lips on mine. I'm so tired, Sasha. So cold. I'll just rest for a bit.
Not yet, Greg.
36 caught my arm and kept me from falling on my face, his words soothing and kind.
Not today. You have work to do. Look.
At his command, my headlamp flared to life. The static died in my head, and I sucked in a gasp of air through my mask. In front of me, an array of complicated switchboards, dials, and controls waited. All the bulbs lit up like a Christmas tree. Newspaper clippings hung from a large corkboard bolted to the cramped walls of the compartment, along with a few black and white photographs of smiling, voluptuous pinup girls. A clock built by little round dials in the console read 1302. At the forefront of the array stood a single black metal chair, and on the desk, a set of antique black headphones. Paralyzed by the silence of my brain clearing, I gaped at the room in awe.
Beep.
I recoiled from the headset in surprise.
Beep, beep. Beep.
A radio. My whole world shook in perplexed fear, but a strange curiosity overrode any sense of flight. A working radio? How is this possible? 36 picked up the headset, its long black rubber cable plugged into the control panel, and held it out to me. Nature needs balance, Greg. Seven ran from that, and thus lost himself in it. You have a choice. Restore balance or plunge into the storm. Like a jackhammer, my heart thudded inside my chest, and I stared at the headset in his hand. With an ominous click, the little dial clock in the panel rolled over to 1304. Deep inside my mind, like a flame lit in the dark, something shifted. Close the rift. As soft as a butterfly's wing beat, the whisper called to me, not a man or woman, but a cool metallic voice, emotionless and yet unthreatening. It calmed my raging flood of anxiety. The ice left my veins, and the compartment seemed a little less foreign in that moment. This someone didn't mean any harm. No, not someone, I realized. It was the voice of something. Something enormous, cold, and made of steel. I hear you. Muscles operating on autopilot, I sat down at the desk, unzipped my protective hood, and focused all energy on my thoughts. I want to help. With my bulky hood, the air felt cold and fresh, and dried the sweat on my neck in seconds. My name is Greg. The pulse in my temples slowed from its panicked race, and with a smile, I placed the headphones over my ears. What are your orders, Seraph?
24?
I opened my eyes and stared into the bright glare of no less than 7 LED headlamps. 11, 9, 15, 3, and 2 soldiers stared at me from the narrow doorway of the compartment, eyes wide with shock behind their mask visors. It took me a moment to realize how dark the compartment had become, the panel no longer alive with current, the bulbs and dials out. Around my ears, the black rubber headset barked forth no static, no more beeps, and the whisper in my head had disappeared, along with 36. Hey, I croaked, confused and petrified, eyeing the leveled rifle barrels of the guards. I was just... Who are you talking to? From behind the soldiers, the colonel pushed into the room, and the others shrank back at his presence. Seven's anguished face flashed through my memories again, and I snapped my mouth shut, unable to formulate words. He and I locked eyes, and the colonel flexed his right-hand grip on the service pistol he carried.
I asked you a question, 24. Who are you trying to contact?
I don't know. I wasn't trying to radio anyone. Please don't shoot me, please. I don't want to die. Instead of bleeding for mercy, I glanced back at the desk, cast in shadow before me, and spotted an open logbook at my right elbow. I came here with 36.
he and I went to investigate a sound we heard. Following my gaze, the colonel saw the book, and his eyes narrowed to suspicious slits. With the careful movements of a cat stalking a mouse, he edged around me and picked up the logbook. What little portion of his face I could see took a stunned expression.
"Is this your handwriting?" The colonel pushed the logbook at my face, and among a long series of entries, my own pencil marks laid on the paper, dashed and dotted in thick bunched patterns.
"What the? When did I write that? I just sat down. I didn't even say anything over the radio." My face heated up, and I squirmed in my chair, too afraid and confused to think clearly. I don't even know what that is."
"It's Morse code."
The colonel withdrew the book to himself and studied it, using the barrel of his pistol as a pointer on the pages.
R16, look around for a code book. There should be a manual around here somewhere."
R16 lowered his weapon with a reluctant sigh, but snatched up a little blue book from the far side of the console after a few moments of searching.
"Here, sir."
Tense silence followed while the colonel worked with the logbook and penciled alongside three far to my right. R16 and R12 blocked the door behind me, their rifles still trained on my chest. 11, 9, and 15 huddled to the far left of the compartment, watching me with half-terrified stares. It made me feel like a caged animal, and I only wished to put my protective hood back up, run to the rainy outside world and back home to Sasha's waiting arms. The pencil tumbled from the colonel's gloved hand. He looked down at me in the little metal chair, and for the first time, I caught a gleam of disbelief in his eyes.
"Who did you say you were with?"
36? I coughed, my throat dry as a bone all at once. "One of the other workers in my team." At this, 3, 11, 9, and 15 all shook their heads in unison.
24, there is no 36.
3 moved to rub his forehead, but couldn't thanks to his suit. He had to cross his arms instead.
"You are a team of 4, just like everyone else. We only have 32 workers on our force, not 36.
Stunned, I almost fell out of my seat.
"But he saved my life on the nets. I fell, and 36 helped catch me. 15, tell them, you were there."
15 took an instinctive step back at the entry room, now looking at him and dropping his gaze from mine to the floor.
"Dude, I caught you. I was surprised I could do it too, with only one hand. There wasn't anyone else."
Like a thunderclap, it hit me. On the ladder, 15 had seemed confused at me, thanking both him and 36, because to him, we were alone. The colonel hadn't been upset about the strange retro candy bar 36 had given me for my birthday. He had just been stunned to see candy from the 1940s looking brand new. I was the only one who had ever spoken to 36 or included him in our team. 11 never assigned him jobs. 9 never joked with him. 15 never asked him questions. Only me. Because 36 hadn't been there. But before I could panic at the sheer insanity of the realization, my eyes caught a small blur of black letters stenciled on one of the Geiger counters held by the guards. Property of the Environmental Liminal Space Evaluation and Reductive Program. Just like the wording I had seen on the decimeter on my first day. The more I looked, the more I saw it. Printed on an obscure label on the small rucksacks all of us workers had been given. Stamped onto the receivers of the rifles in the guards' hands, and etched into the handheld radio that was hooked to the colonel's belt. These weren't hand-me-downs. This was company property. And it occurred to me that in the entire time I had worked here, I had never once seen an emblem or label for the Black Crow Foundation,
only for Elsar. Because just like 36, the Black Crow Foundation wasn't real either. They're not gonna let me leave now. I'll be shot, or worse. I'll never see Sasha again. Tears welled up in my eyes, and I fought them in desperate panic. Please, I'm fine, really. I'm not dangerous, really. I'm not. I'm not like Seven. I don't hear voices or anything. Please, Colonel, sir, you don't even have to pay me for today. I'll just go. Today? The Colonel leaned down to meet me eye level, his harsh tone softened by shock. 24, you've been missing for 3 days. What? I pleaded, and my outstretched hands trembled with despair. That's not possible. It hasn't even been an hour. Calm down. He placed the logbook in my lap, and the Colonel patted me on the shoulder with an almost sympathetic touch. Just stay calm and no one will shoot you, all right? I need you to do something for me. Just this one thing, and you could go home, I promise. Read this. Really? Hope and relief welled in my chest. I snatched up the logbook and sniffled back tears behind my gas mask. Home. I would be home by the end of the week with Sasha, and I could put all of this behind me. This entire idea had been one big lousy mistake, one I swore to myself I would never repeat. But my eyes found the words on the translated page and I fought to breathe. 1219. Incoming. BB-136. Come in, BB-136. This is CB-24. We have lost visual of you in the northern quadrant of the AO. Repeat. We have lost visual of you. Please confirm location. Over. 1225. Incoming. BB-136. This is CB-24. 7th Fleet. What is your location? 1237. Incoming. BB-136. USS Seraph. Are you reading us? Over. 1242. Incoming. BB-136. Please confirm your location and status. 1246. Incoming. BB-136. Be aware that multiple Soviet submarines have been reported in your vicinity. Are you under attack? Over. 1300. Incoming. BB-136. This is Admiral Hastley, 7th Fleet Command of the USS Windham Bay. If you do not report within the next 10 minutes, I will assume you had been attacked by the enemy and will engage all Soviet craft within the area of operations of our full arsenal, including our atomic systems. For the last time, USS Seraph, please respond. My gaze traveled to the newspaper clippings on the wall, and a horrific dread filled my guts. Each of the headlines came from post-World War II dates, but the events were all wrong. Truman vows to retake Poland from Soviets as atomic race intensifies. Stalin sends warships around Midway to thwart rumored U.S. nuclear-capable warships. Red Army tanks square off with Allied soldiers in deadly showdown outside Berlin. 7th Fleet sent to force Russian submarines from Pacific shipping lanes. The others were watching my reaction with startled wonder. But for me, the truth rang like a long, screaming descent of a bomb. It never ended, I whispered to myself behind the black rubber fortress of my mask. Not for them. They just kept fighting until... I forced myself to look down at the last message of the logbook and fought the urge to throw the little tablet. Unlike the other entries, this line of Morse code had been written in my handwriting. 1304. Outgoing. Mayday, mayday, 7th Fleet. This is BB-136, USS Seraph. Do not launch your attack. I repeat, do not launch your attack. We are not engaged by the Soviets. Our vessel has been caught in a maelstrom at approximately 165 degrees east and 30 degrees north. Electrical activity from the storm seems to be causing our radio to malfunction. And our lookouts report unusual waves of dangerous proportions. We were unable to veer out of the path of the storm at this time, and will try to ride it out. After it passes, we will rendezvous with you at Midway. This is BB-136, USS Seraph, signing off. I didn't even feel the logbook slide through my fingers on its way to the cold steel floor. Instead, I looked back at the little dial clock on the control panel and choked back a sob. The clock had stopped on 1304.